Hello and welcome to episode 3 of the Plain English Cybersecurity Podcast. I'm your host, Eric English, and in this podcast, we aim to make cybersecurity easy to understand. We try to explain it in plain English. So that's what we're here to do. This is episode 3 of our podcast. We're just kicking things off here. And today is Wednesday, May 21st of 2025, and today we're going to discuss primarily networking and some of the security concepts when it comes to network security. So for a quick review of our previous episodes, the first episode we went through kind of some cybersecurity basics. What is cybersecurity? What is the CIA triad, the threat landscape, and then key terms that we use in the industry. And we also talked about malware, viruses, Trojans, ransomware, social engineering, insider threats, all kinds of fun stuff like that. And then last episode, it was a lot about best practices, multi-factor, fun stuff like that. So today is primarily going to be focused around network security and just general networking concepts. I think this is where, you know, having this base knowledge of just IT understanding in general really is going to help catapult you in the cybersecurity world, because you're going to understand how all these things work in IT. And then if you understand how all these things work, it's much easier to be able to figure out how to secure those things. So it's really, really important that you have that base knowledge of just general IT, general networking concepts, all of the basic knowledge, like the OSI model and things like that. Those are all things that you really want to have a good grasp on and understand. That way it makes your journey into cybersecurity a lot easier. Now, it's much easier said than done, right? There's so much in the IT world that, you know, you could study for a long time, right? But just try to go out and get some of the basics about IT and networking and servers and workstations, and just try to at least understand the basics of those. And that will then, like I said, help you with your cybersecurity stuff. So when we talk about networking, there's a lot to dive into here. So I'm going to focus this around network security. However, as we're talking about securing your network, we're going to discuss general networking concepts as well. So I'm going to try to throw in a little bit of both, but you may have to do some self-study here. You may have to go out and learn about the different network protocols that are out there, the different port numbers that things run on, all that kind of fun stuff. So let's dive in here. So basic networking, let's talk about ports. So a service could be something like, you know, a web server. So if you're running a website, right, that service, that web service uses a port and or ports. So before, I think it was what, 2017, maybe even a little further back than that, websites were only HTTP. HTTP uses port 80. Okay, well, since then, the internet has moved to HTTPS. So HTTPS, the S stands for secure, that's going to run on port 443. So these are just a couple of very quick and easy examples, because we all use a web browser. We all go to https://google.com, whatever it is. We've all seen that. We all have used it. So another service that's very commonly used on the internet is DNS, domain naming service. So what does DNS do? Well, when you type in google.com in your web browser, it's not really going to google.com. It's actually going to an IP address. This is where DNS comes into play. DNS is what translates that friendly, easy-to-read name. So we can all remember google.com, right? That's super easy. Now, how easy is it to remember 25.134.263.124? Can you remember that? Probably not, right? So it's much easier to type in a friendly name like google.com. Super simple, super easy. Well, that's what DNS does. DNS is the mechanism that translates that friendly name into an IP address, and that IP address is where your traffic is directed to. So IP addresses are another massive topic, but let's stay on the port topic real quick here. So DNS runs on port 53. So these are again just very, very basic ports, and I would study, you know, the most common ports. You got things like SSH runs on port 22. You know, all this kind of stuff that you're going to need to know what ports these things run on so that you can better secure those various services that are running on those ports. So if you're running a web server on port 80, well, guess what? That's not encrypted. So you're going to want to change the port on that web server to go to 443. And when you do that, you also have to apply a security certificate so that the connection to your web server is encrypted. So I know this is a lot to kind of take in here. So let's just stay with the port numbers. So studying those top, you know, I think there's probably a top, you know, 50 or 100 services that you can study up on and the various ports that they use. That is a very good thing to just kind of have it in your back pocket, memorize those. Try to remember all of those port numbers that you possibly can, because that will make your life easier when you go to configure a firewall and configure the security on the firewall. You need to know what ports and what IP addresses you're going to be securing, right? So IP addresses are a whole nother can of worms. I'm going to try to dive into this just a little bit, but this is going to take some self-study. But an IP address is essentially like a street address, if you think about it that way. So every street that you go down in a neighborhood, everyone's got an address on their door, right? Your address is 101, you know, Main Street, whatever it is, right? Well, that 101 is essentially like an IP address, right? It's a location. So it's a way to route traffic. You can think about it the same way when you're driving your car. You want to go the correct route when you're driving to that correct address, to that street address where you're trying to get to. Very similar on the internet. So if you're going to google.com, your browser is going to translate using DNS. It's going to translate google.com to an IP address. From there, the traffic coming from your computer to that website to pull the information from that website now knows the path that it needs to go to get to that IP address. It's going to go out over the internet and it's going to go to this particular IP address or that street address. So you can think about it like, you know, it's just like having a home address or a street address. That's probably the easiest analogy that I can think of that really helps explain, you know, what an IP address is, right? Now, they also have a couple different versions of IP addresses. They have IP version 4. And now they have IP version 6. IP version 6 is much bigger in the address space. So IP version 4, we were actually running out of IP addresses. I don't think, you know, when people first created all of this infrastructure, we didn't realize that we would run out of IP addresses. Just didn't think about it, right? We thought, oh, we'll never run out. And of course, never say never. And we ran out. So IP version 6 came out, where the address space that you can use is much, much bigger. So we can use billions and billions of additional IP addresses now using IP version 6. IP version 4 is still very heavily used. It's still the primary right now on the internet. So most of what you see, especially on your home network, that's going to be IP version 4 the vast majority of the time. So that's kind of a brief synopsis of what an IP address is and kind of how it routes traffic, right? Using DNS, and it's going to go through a router that you've got. Your router basically has ways that it reaches out to various other routers on the internet to say, hey, do you have this IP address? Yes, go to this router over here. You go to that other router and say, hey, where is this IP address? And it's like, oh yeah, you should go to this router up here. So it routes all your traffic over the internet, hitting multiple different stops along the way, all just to get to google.com. And it all happens in the blink of an eye, which is really cool. So anyway, IP addressing, think about it like a street address or a home address, right? That's the address that you're trying to get to with your traffic, right? So you can tinker with all of the different subnets that they've got for IP addresses. I would highly recommend learning the CIDR notation. So you'll hear a /24 or a /32, whatever it is, right? You need to understand what that CIDR notation is. We're not going to dive into that. This is going to be hopefully a little more about security here in a minute. But I want to touch on these basic concepts because it's really important to understand these, like I said previously. So that's kind of a quick, you know, rundown of various ports. There's plenty more ports to go and look at. You have over 65,000 ports. Not all of those ports are used, right? So there are default ports that services run on. So for example, HTTPS, we'll use that example again. The default port for HTTPS is 443, right? Okay, but what if you didn't want to use 443? Do you have to use 443? No, you don't. You can use any port that you want for whatever service that you want. You just need to configure it that way. And so if you're going to go to a different port using your web browser, you would type in google.com:, and then the port number. So if you change it to port 8080, it would be google.com:8080. And that would redirect you to Google to that IP address on port 8080. Okay, so you can use these services on any port that you want, but they do have a default assigned port. So what you need to memorize is those default ports that are assigned to the most common services out there, FTP, SSH, HTTP, HTTPS, DNS, anything and everything like that. Those are things that you want to memorize and just have in your back pocket. Okay, so those are your ports. Those are your services. Again, you can run a service on any port that you want. You just have to change that port number. So that's a very quick and dirty rundown of IPs, like I said, DNS, all that fun stuff. So this is where you get into more of the security side of this, the network security side with your firewalls. And they also have what's called IDS and IPS. IDS is intrusion detection system or service. IPS is intrusion prevention system or service. So what does that mean? Well, first and foremost, your firewall is what basically protects your internal network, your home network, or your office network from all the crazy stuff on the internet. There are so many bots and Trojans just floating around on the internet trying to hack into different things, and it is crazy. So you have to have a firewall nowadays. If you want to do a fun experiment, and I say fun in air quotes, you can always... If you're comfortable doing this, you can put a Windows, let's say an unpatched version of Windows 10 on the public internet. Put it directly onto the internet and then wait and see how long it takes for that Windows 10 system to get hacked. It's literally within minutes. So this is where, you know, your firewall comes into play. And the biggest thing to remember about firewalls is that by default, you should be denying all traffic by default. That's what it is. Deny by default. Only allow what you absolutely need to allow. So when you're allowing things, you could be allowing an IP address. You could be allowing a port or both, right? So these are the things that you would be configuring on your firewall. Hey, Mr. Firewall, I want to allow this IP address on the internet to connect to my internal network on port 8080. I don't know why you'd want to do that. I'm just throwing out an example. But let's say you had a system on your internal network that needed to synchronize or, you know, connect to another system out on the internet. Well, you can configure your firewall to say, hey, when you see traffic from this public IP address, route it to my internal system over here on this port number. And that would allow the connection to, at least inbound to that system, to connect to whatever service you're running. Now you can do two-way connections, so you can allow the connection in but not out. You could allow it out but not in, or you could allow bi-directional communication, so in and out. The one thing you want to really shy away from when you're creating firewall rules is the any-any rule. Any-any means that you're going to allow any IP address, for example, on any port to connect to any system. This is where you're going to get in a lot of trouble. Anything where you use the any rule is very, very, or can be very, very dangerous. So you want to be very cautious about any kind of any rules that you're going to create. You want to make it very specific and say, hey, only this IP address can connect into me, right? I'm not going to allow any IP address to connect to me. That's not cool. I don't want somebody in Russia hacking into my stuff, right? So you only allow a very specific IP address and a very specific port or service to connect in. So other things with your firewall that you're going to be configuring as far as security goes, you're going to be looking at things like, you know, the various types of traffic that are coming in and going out and looking for anything malicious. And as part of that, you may say, oh, I don't like that, you know, from my internal network, some workstation is going out over the internet and connecting to a malicious website. Well, I'm going to tell my firewall, hey, if you see any of these types of connections going to these malicious websites, block it. So you're doing web filtering, URL filtering, whatever you want to call it, website filtering. So you're going to block malicious sites, right, using that firewall. Again, these are very, very basic things that you'd be setting up on a firewall. There's also the intrusion detection, intrusion prevention. Very similar, you know, these are, again, just, it's either you're going to detect the intrusion and not take action. That's intrusion detection. And you're going to get like an alert, for example. You'd get an email alert or an alert in your SIM. And we'll talk about a SIM here in a little bit, probably in a few episodes, but you'll get an alert, right? Or you can do intrusion prevention, which prevents that intrusion or potential intrusion. So you can set it up a couple of different ways. If you just want to listen and get alerts and do the blocking yourself or the prevention yourself, you can certainly do that. If you want the firewall to take that action for you, that's when you want the intrusion prevention pieces. And again, with those, it's a similar kind of thing. You're going to deny by default, but any traffic that is coming in and out, you want to inspect that traffic. You want to look at it. You want to say, okay, I see this connection from this IP address. Is it malicious? I see this connection. Is it malicious? I see it transferring data. Is that data malicious, right? You want to be able to check all those kinds of things. And, you know, most firewalls nowadays do all these things for you. And I would highly recommend to do the intrusion prevention just to be on the safe side. But if you're worried it's going to block something inadvertently, then yeah, okay, you can do IDS and get an alert about potential suspicious traffic. For me personally, I would deny by default, right? Like if the intrusion prevention thing says it looks bad, block it. If it turns out that it's good, I would rather be the one to go and allow something rather than have to go check every single alert from my IDS and go put in block rules for everything. Just makes it way more overhead, basically, way more work for you. Now, some of the newer firewalls, you hear the next-gen firewalls, they do some additional filtering. They will do what's called SSL decryption. So SSL is Secure Socket Layer, and technically SSL really isn't being used. It's TLS nowadays, but the mechanism that the firewall is using is called SSL decryption. And so what does that mean? So SSL and TLS are the encryption protocols that are used with HTTPS websites, typically. So when you set up a security certificate on your website using HTTPS, this is where your SSL decryption comes into play. The firewall will stop the traffic on the way out. It will decrypt the traffic. So when you encrypt your traffic or decrypt, let's talk about that real quick. Encrypting traffic is basically securing the data. You're wrapping the data in this secure encrypted container, if you will, and saying this is just a bunch of gibberish data unless you have the certificate to decrypt or to read this data that's in this secure container. So SSL decryption takes the traffic and says, oh, you're going to that website? Let me look at it. It decrypts your traffic. It inspects it and says, okay, what IP address are you going to? Okay, what port are you using? Okay, cool. That all looks good. Now, what data are you transferring to and from this website? Ooh, you're going to upload a Word document to this website? That's not allowed by the firewall policy. SSL decryption would then block that action, block that traffic. So SSL decryption is super cool, very handy, especially for data loss prevention. Data loss prevention is where you're trying to prevent data from being, you know, stolen or lost, really, or exfiltrated is the fancy term. But really, you want to protect your data, right? You want to prevent data loss. So at your business, you want to make sure that whatever sensitive data you have, that you are protecting it, right? You're not giving it away. It's not going out of, you know, going out the internet to some random hackers. So SSL decryption plays a big role in DLP, data loss prevention, and also just additional security. And then in addition to SSL decryption, a lot of the next gen firewalls also do things like user ID or user identification. What is user identification? Well, you can say, if you integrate your firewall with your Active Directory, we'll talk about Active Directory later, but if you integrate that with the Active Directory, you can actually tell what user is accessing what website, right? So now you can make policies on your firewall based on specific users or groups even. And that way, if you are a part of this group, yes, you're allowed to go to that site. If you're not a member of this group or your username is not, you know, John Smith, then no, you cannot go to this website. So the user ID piece or identity-based firewall controls are super cool too. Give you a lot of capabilities to block, again, based on the identity of the user. So, hey, the marketing department, they can go to, you know, social media sites. But anybody outside of that group or that department, nope, you're all blocked. So that's where user ID comes in handy. It also comes in handy when or if you have some sort of a security incident and you're trying to go back and investigate, how did this incident start? What happened here? How did this begin? Right? So you can go into your firewall and say, oh, John Smith is the one that downloaded that file. Ooh, let me go talk to John Smith and see what's going on. I need to investigate John Smith's computer now. Right? So it can help you with incident response, with tracking down, you know, any kind of malicious activity specific to a user, right? Because a lot of times too, without that, you're going to see the malicious traffic going to an IP address on your internal network. Okay, where is that IP address? Who's using that system? This is where user ID makes that a million times easier. If you know who's using that system on that IP address, you can go talk to that person right away. It just helps all the way around. So anyway, those are some of the functions of the newer next-gen firewalls that you've got. There are plenty more. I'm just kind of scratching the surface here, but those are kind of the big ones, the general that the masses use, right, to help secure their network. So we touched on this a little bit already, but the whole deny by default mentality can also be called zero trust. You may hear that term quite a bit too. Zero trust is, again, you're not trusting anything or anyone. So anything outside of the norm or outside of an allow list gets blocked. Again, you're denying by default. You're only allowing the things that you want. So you're not trusting anything. You're denying everything until you say, oh, yes, I do want to allow this one thing to happen. Then you can go into your zero trust policies, configure those to allow whatever traffic that is that you're looking to allow. So zero trust is another way to look at the deny by default kind of mentality, but zero trust applies to more than just a firewall. It can apply to all of cybersecurity, right? So anything you do on your computer, you can make your computer zero trust. So you'd have a list of things that you do trust or that you do allow on your computer, but anything that falls outside of that allow list gets blocked, right? So anyway, the zero trust mentality and that all those principles are becoming very, very common nowadays too. Zero trust is very difficult to implement, especially in a corporate environment. There's a lot of things that you have to figure out. So it's not for the faint of heart. It's very, very hard to do. But if you can get to that zero trust mentality, you're going to be way more secure than you ever were before. So you'll hear the deny by default, zero trust. Those kind of go hand in hand. In addition to some other just general network security stuff, you want to segment your network or separate your networks, right? We don't want to have everything all on the same network. Now, you may be asking why. Well, in case there's some sort of an attack or a breach that happens, if your networks are segmented correctly and you're doing zero trust and someone hacks into one of those segments of your network, they won't be able to get to any other systems because it's segmented off. And people do this a lot of times for like their IoT devices, you know, their any kind of IoT, it doesn't matter what it is, if it's a thermostat or a smart door lock or a smart doorbell or a smart light switch or outlet, whatever it is, a lot of people put all of those IoT devices on their own network or on their own subnet that is totally segmented from the primary network where all of the crown jewels are. So segmentation is big, but one of the big things with segmentation, you'll hear the term VLAN or virtual LAN. So a LAN, by the way, is a local area network. So a virtual local area network is a mechanism that you can apply to a switch. Now, these VLANs basically tag the traffic and say, you know, anything that is, that any traffic that looks like this is on this VLAN, right? People mistake VLANs for segmentation. And yes, it is a way of segmenting. However, to fully and properly segment your VLANs, you need a firewall in between each VLAN. And this is where a lot of people make the mistakes. They'll configure all of their VLANs on a switch with no firewall in between those VLANs. Well, that doesn't mean that I can't. So they think, oh, I've got everything VLAN'd off. All my networks are segmented. Actually, they're not. All you're doing is tagging the traffic and saying this IP range is on this VLAN. That's all that you're doing. Without the firewall there to stop traffic from traversing to multiple different VLANs, you really haven't segmented anything. So keep that in mind when you're doing segmentation. A VLAN is not segmented until there's a firewall. When the firewall is in place, it can then block traffic saying, oh, no, you're not on this VLAN 2. You cannot pass to VLAN 3, right? Whatever it is, however you have it set up. And you can number the VLANs any way you wish. But if you're going to do VLANs, make sure you got a firewall in between so that it's actually segmented. Because otherwise, you're just tagging the traffic and saying, this is a VLAN. So you got to actually enforce that security with the firewall. So keep that in mind. I know that's kind of a little more in the weeds than what we're trying to get into here. But that's one thing I always try to mention, that you need to have the firewall there to truly segment. So another big topic in the network security side of things is remote access and VPNs. You'll hear VPN a lot, virtual private network, and remote access. So those kind of go hand in hand. Remote access is a way that you can connect to, you know, some other system from a remote destination. So I'm going to be at home. I'm going to connect to a server in Taiwan. That is remote access. Well, how do you actually connect to that server in Taiwan? There's a few different ways, but the most common is through a virtual private network or a VPN. So what is a VPN? A VPN is a way to connect two different networks over the internet. And when you connect those two networks, you're connecting basically two firewalls, and you're creating what's called a secure tunnel or a VPN tunnel over the internet. So these two firewalls can connect over the internet through this VPN tunnel. And that VPN tunnel is encrypted heavily so that no one on the internet can read what's in that VPN tunnel. They cannot see anything other than just gibberish traffic because it's all highly encrypted, which is what you want. Once that VPN tunnel is established and connected, now I can connect to that server in Taiwan, for example. So this is just a very rudimentary example of remote access using a VPN. You may have also heard of personal VPNs where you can protect your privacy and, you know, connect to a VPN from your phone or your laptop or whatever it is, right? It doesn't matter what the device is, but you can connect to these VPN services to encrypt your traffic and protect your privacy. You don't want people knowing where you're browsing to, right? You don't want people knowing what your home IP address is. Well, that's where these personal VPNs come into play. And we'll dive into these way, way more, but we're trying to stay high level here. So just trying to touch on some of the high level basics of what these terms are and what they mean. But a VPN tunnel is very handy nowadays. It's one of the most common ways to do remote access. Now, there are other tools out there to do remote access. It's not just a VPN. So you can use stuff like LogMeIn or TeamViewer or AnyDesk or RustDesk or anything like that, where it is a mechanism where you can remotely control a system through port 443 on your firewall, which is super cool, actually. Basically, what these other services do that aren't VPNs, like a LogMeIn, for example, it will negotiate that remote access connection via a web browser. So you install the LogMeIn program on your server, for example, that you want to access remotely, and you don't need a VPN tunnel at all, which is super cool. So that server that you've got the LogMeIn software on has a connection to the LogMeIn cloud. And what you do is you connect to the LogMeIn cloud from wherever you are, it's just through a web browser, and say, hey, I want to connect to my server over there. And it says, okay, sure. And it does all of this over port 443. So very, very cool to set up and much easier to set up than a VPN, that's for sure. Not all of these are free, so you got to keep that in mind. But anyway, those are some of the ways to do remote access. You also have other protocols like SSH. I touched on that briefly. There's also remote desktop protocol and things like that. So with SSH, with VPNs, with remote desktop protocol, anything like that, any kind of remote access, you have to make 1000% sure that you secure that remote access. What do I mean by that? Well, I mean set up multi-factor authentication and make sure that you've got a very strong username and password. Otherwise, if someone guesses your password or steals your password via a phishing email, which we talked about previously, if I steal your password through a phishing email and you don't have multi-factor set up on your VPN, you don't have multi-factor set up on your LogMeIn account, well, guess what? I can now log into your LogMeIn account, or I can log into your VPN, and I can connect as if I was you. That's where that multi-factor piece comes in. Even if I have your password, I don't have your cell phone where your authenticator app is. I don't have that text message that's sent to you, right? So this is why any kind of remote access, no matter what it is, SSH, RDP, LogMeIn, a VPN, doesn't matter. It 1000% must have multi-factor authentication in order to be secure. So I cannot stress that enough. You have to be very, very careful with remote access. Because again, think about it. Like I said, you put a Windows 10 computer out on the internet, it's going to be hacked in minutes, right? So these bots are out there finding anything and everything they can hack into. And they are hacking into it. So if you set up remote access and it's not secure, guess what? It's going to get hacked. It's only a matter of time. So set up that multi-factor on any kind of remote access. It doesn't matter what it is. Also set up logging. Make sure you log and you know who is connecting, right? If you don't have that log of who is connecting, how do you know that it's actually who it says it was? So you got to have multi-factor. You want to log those connections. That way you can go back and review and say, ooh, somebody did steal my password because I didn't log in at 3 o'clock in the morning to my VPN, right? So if you have those logs, it'll help you with investigations, with incident response, any and all kinds of fun stuff like that. Okay, I think I've gone far enough today. We're a little past the 30-minute mark, so I will cut it off right there. But again, just to kind of recap, we talked about basic networking, IP addresses, DNS, different ports and protocols. We talked about a little bit about firewalls and the intrusion detection, intrusion prevention, and different firewall controls that you can implement. We also talked about network segmentation and zero trust. And then lastly, we talked about VPNs and remote access. So on the agenda for next week, we're going to try to talk about data privacy and data protection. So this is going to go into encryption and data loss prevention and backups and all kinds of fun stuff like that. So stay tuned for next week's episode, and appreciate everybody listening, and we'll talk again next week.